Hello, everybody, and welcome to Absurd Hypotheticals, the show where we overthink dumb questions so you don't have to. I'm your host, Marcus Lehner, and I'm joined here today by Chris Yee and Ben Storms. Say hi, guys.
Hey, everybody, I'm Chris.
Hey, I'm Ben.
I had a topic planned to talk about, but that's out the fucking window, because the only thing I can think about anymore is the spider that was in my shower this morning and, like, totally freaked me the fuck out.
How big was this spider?
Yeah, that's the important first question. Yeah.
Okay, so you have, like, your normal house spider that's, like, barely visible.
Yeah.
This is the one that's just in the visible spectrum where it's, like, uncomfortably visible. Like, you can see it. It's got thickness. It's got, you know, you can see two separate body parts and all the legs.
It's got thickness is such a good statement.
The spider's got thickness.
Low-key thick. Yeah.
This is a full-on three-dimensional fucking spider that I had to deal with. Eight legs, three dimensions. We're having a problem.
Yeah.
And so, normally, if I have a spider in the shower, I just kill it, because I can do that. I can manage that. But this one was all the way in the tippity top corner, like, two legs on the ceiling, three legs on one wall, three legs on the other wall. It was at, like, a 45-degree angle.
Corner spiders are the worst spiders, because you know that they have all the options if you try to engage them.
And mostly it was like, hey, I don't need to kill the spider. I just, like, it's not going to bother me all the way up there. We have high ceilings. I probably couldn't have reached it if I tried. I might have just slipped and died.
You should have just taken the shower head and, like, blasted the wall.
It is. We don't have a detachable.
Oh.
You can make it detachable once.
Yeah, you can always detach it. You just can't reattach it.
Yeah. So, I was like, you know what? I'm going to let spider be. It's not going to bother me. I'm just going to not stress about it. And so I started taking my shower, shampoo up, and I look again. And inexplicably, for no reason, the spider has decided it's going to start descending very slowly down the wall.
Making it move.
Now, here's the problem with spider shower, with shower spiders.
Spider showers.
Spider showers are a horrible, horrible thing. But the problem with shower spiders, when the water is running, is that you've added a chaotic element to your spider interaction. So my shower has a lot of pressure, and I can see, like, the rain, the drops hitting the wall, like, pretty close to the spider. And I just know for a fact one of them's gonna hit the spider. And what happens then is the spider falls. But, and this is what happened, which really upset me, was that it fell, it caught itself with its web. So it's, like, falling down the string, and then it hits, like, the main spray and gets shot, like, forward, like a pendulum. And now, at basically exactly eye height, the spider has now shot past my head and is at its peak. It's in the middle of the shower, and it's gonna start, and it comes right back in my direction.
Wait, the web didn't break from
the web did not
jet
break,
stream?
So it just got, like, knocked by, like, the lucky drop that was just enough force to shoot it halfway across the shower, but not detach it from its inexplicable and unstoppable course right back towards my body area.
So, I mean, I guess the one advantage you have here is that the most disconcerting thing is when you see a spider and then you look away and then you look back and the spider is just gone. Here, you know exactly where the spider is, at least.
It's right in front of your face.
Directly in front of your face.
See, I subscribe to that theory where there was definitely a correct amount of information to have about spiders, like, you know, from best to worst, where the best is, you know, there's no spider, or you're not aware of any spiders. That's the best one.
Right.
And then one step down is, there's a spider and you see it. That sucks. But the worst is, you know there's a spider and you don't see it. That's the worst one.
If there is a spider, you want to be able to count the legs, not the hairs on the legs.
Yeah, but I'm going to add a fourth category now, a special category, if you will, is you see a spider, you know where the spider is, and then it's also hurtling towards you at a speed
right.
You cannot comprehend. Long story short, I survived. The spider did, I did make a less than elegant dodge motion away from the spider, and then it hit the mainstream again, and this time it disconnected and got drowned and all the good stuff, but it was not a fun time. For me and my body and my brain.
I mean, it sounds like he had it better than the spider, at least, so.
That just reminds me of, like, that video with all the spiders, like, raining down from the sky. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, like the ones where they parachute?
Yeah, where, like, the camera looks up and it's just, like, spiders everywhere.
Oh, God,
in the sky.
Yeah. I didn't remember what video you were talking about at first, but yeah, no, yeah.
Or, like, those flood photos where, like, all the trees are just now just, like, Halloween decoration trees where there's literally just spider webs covering every branch. It's just gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They kill bugs, though. Spiders are good. That's what my adult brain is saying. my kid brain is saying, oh my god, all spiders gotta die. But as we have not indicated yet, this show is not just about spiders. It is about answering hypothetical questions. And our first question for today is, what if it rained food, cloudy with a chance of meatball style? Chris, give me your take on this question.
Yeah, so just to go over some rules that we kind of agreed on beforehand. So all the normal rain patterns stay the same. And then all the food is going to match the volume of, like, the rain that we would normally get. Food would stay the normal size. So, like, I think cloudy with a chance of meatballs had, like, giant meatballs and stuff. We're not going to get any of that stuff.
I mean, that was only after the weather machine broke in the movie. You know, it was regular size, and then it broke, and then things got crazy.
Well, I'm talking about the book. I think there are giant meatballs in the book, right?
I don't know. I just watched the movie.
Full disclosure, I have not watched the movie or read the book, so I'm kind of flying blind here, guys.
Ben, what the fuck? Do you not like delightful things in your life?
I like some delightful things. I just like to deprive myself of some of them too, apparently.
This is like source material for this question. How did you answer this question without having seen Cloudy?
Yeah, that's like research. It's like homework you have to do.
I made some assumptions. Come on.
I made some assumptions.
The slogan of this show is I made some assumptions, so cut me some slack here.
The food is going to be served, like, it's going to fall as served, so it's going to be cooked and seasoned. It's not going to be raw. And then, finally, the food items are going to be random, so we're not going to, like, you're not going to know what's coming. It'll be predicted in, like, the forecast, but it's not going to be 100% correct. So, those are just some ground rules.
Now, when you say, like, not 100% correct, is it, like, a chance of food precipitation, or the chance of the food precipitation is pizza?
I think we were saying that it's going to be, like, the chance of rain sort of thing. Like, the percentage that they give you now in forecasts is going to be similar to that.
Right, but there's going to be, like, an extra percent of what food it is.
Yeah, you get two percentages where you have the type of food and the chance of food.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of beach calculus where it's like, oh, it's a nice day out, but there's a 40% chance of precipitation, and it's a 60% chance of meatballs. It's like, I don't mind if it's the 40% salad. I'll go to the beach in that, but I don't want the meatball on the beach.
Okay, so to start out, I wanted to see exactly how much rain we would get. I just wanted to look at rain data, and obviously that varies a lot depending on where you are in the world. So I specifically looked at Boston, just because we're in Boston. And Boston gets 49 inches of rain a year on average. And then depending on the month, it averages around 5 inches per month. And just recently, like last month, we got in a 1-inch storm. That was the biggest storm that month. And then in April, we got a 2.5-inch storm.
Hey Ben, is that your porno name? 2.5-inch storm.
I can't even go with a comeback because that was actually pretty good. So I'm just going to accept that one.
So I wanted to see how much of this I could collect because, like, obviously if food is falling, I'm going to want to collect it just because it's free food. So assuming that I have a yard that's like 50 feet by 50 feet, I don't know if that's like the normal size of yards because I don't have one. But let's just say it's 50 by 50.
Sure. Like in Boston, probably.
Well, I don't have, yeah, people aren't going to have a yard in Boston, but like in the suburbs.
Suburbs, like, I had a suburban fact. I had 60 by 100 for suburbs.
Okay. Well, then mine's small, but still. For 50 by 50, you get 1,500 gallons in volume. So that's a lot of food if you convert that to food.
If you compare 1,500 gallons to food, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. So I don't think food is really going to be a problem. If you collect it, you might have to, like, preserve some of it just because you don't know when the next rainstorm is going to be and you want to be all set. Like, if you're in California, then if there's a drought, then you might be in trouble. But if a storm is, like, happening 3 or 4 times a month, I think you'll be fine.
Yep, I actually did the math, that, and I can just insert it here, whether a suburban property would be self-sufficient. So I came out that a suburban property can support 6 people on average food-wise.
Yeah, okay. So assuming that I would be doing this, I'm single. So it'd just be me. I'd be fine.
you would be well fed.
Yes. And I would have extra. So looking at one of the problems, though, and I didn't really realize this immediately, but it wouldn't rain water anymore.
Yeah, that happens.
So we would be consuming water and we wouldn't get water.
I would argue that you would very occasionally get water, but it would be a very low probability.
Yeah, we would get water sometimes because, like, it can rain drinks and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
So it can rain juice and soda and stuff like that, milk. And water is technically a drink, so it can rain water. But it's not going to happen that often.
Oh, man, I do not want to be around on, like, tomato soup day.
I don't want to be around a milk day.
Milk day is fine. It's day after milk day. That's the problem.
I think the worst is actually like curry day.
Curry day.
Like, it'll be delicious for like the first, you know, 5 minutes, but then that's just going to ruin your whole week, honestly.
Yeah, so we wouldn't get nearly as much water as we do now. So we'd need to replace it somehow. And you can actually juice anything that retains water. So you can juice any type of food.
Oh my god, I hope this fact stays in your brain. So like you're at a party at some point and someone's like eating a burger and you look over and you don't have anything to say. So you're just like, you know, you could juice that if you wanted.
You could juice that if you wanted.
You could juice that if you tried.
Yeah, so just looking at a few things that you can juice. Obviously, if you're thinking about juicing, you think about fruit. So like you can juice oranges. One orange gives you 3 ounces of liquid, so that's pretty good. You can apples, cherries; those are other fruits. Listing fruits.
Well researched.
You can juice vegetables. A lot of people do that for health reasons right now. Tomatoes, spinach, potatoes, stuff like that.
We'll do it for necessity in this terrible, terrible food rain future.
But as Marcus mentioned, you can also juice meat. So there's actually a chef that does this right now, and he serves it in one of his restaurants. His name is Jose Andre.
That's a made-up name. Did you fact-check this?
He has a restaurant in Las Vegas, and he does this.
Oh, yeah, Las Vegas.
That makes a lot more sense, yeah.
Yeah, so he actually doesn't use a juicer. He hand juices it.
Artisanal meat juice.
Yeah, so he just gets like a steak. And he just like squeezes it into a glass, and then he adds a little salt, and he serves it like that.
He's gonna be tough on it now, because Las Vegas, of all the cities that I looked at, has the least amount of rain. He's only gonna have 4.2 inches of rain food to work with.
Yeah, he'll have to rethink his model. In addition to him, there are some other people that do this. Because right now people do like juice cleanses and stuff. But there is a such thing as an eau juice cleanse.
Oh, God.
So, you know, like for like French dip sandwiches, they have eau juice.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, this eau juice cleanse includes 6 bottles of eau juice a day for 10 days. And that's all you drink / eat.
10 days?
For 10 days.
How do you survive that?
It's supposed to be healthy, but I don't think it is.
There's no way that's healthy.
Chris, but what about your pooping? What's going to happen? Chris, there's no, a poop problem.
I really
here.
Don't want to think about this in this situation.
What?
The poop problem on the eau jus cleanse. It's very much a problem.
They're called eau jups?
The guy behind this cleanse, he mentioned that like normal juice cleanses, they have like vitamins and stuff in the vegetables and fruit. But he was like, what this lacks in vitamins, it makes up for in sodium.
Wait.
He's like, I drink like 900% of my daily intake of sodium every day.
That's bad.
I know, it's bad, but he said it like it's a good thing.
Oh, no.
Are you sure this wasn't a joke?
This could have been a joke, right?
I'm pretty sure it's not a joke. The website looked legitimate. And then a third thing that's meat juice related... It's just called meat juice. It's a brand name, meat juice. And they make different flavors. They have ham, they have liver. And then at the bottom, they have a note that says meat juice can be used in any recipe instead of milk. So if you have like a recipe for like a cake or something, don't use milk. Just use meat juice.
Yeah, you know, I put a splash of milk in my scrambled eggs in the morning. Can't wait to replace that with meat juice.
I mean, it's just like, it's like mixing in bacon or something, I guess.
Just have meat juice with your cereal.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just proof that you can juice meat. We already do it. So if it rains meat, we're good. And yeah, that's my plan, just to replace water. Well, it was to replace water, and then it turned into juicing meat. For some reason. Yeah, that's my plan.
Plans change.
Yeah.
Yeah, we pull an audible.
Yeah.
You gotta improvise when the times get tough.
When life gives you meat, you make meat aid.
Yeah, so that's my answer. What about you, Marcus?
Okay, so I kind of went along the same lines, and the thing I focus on mostly is that it's not raining anymore, and so, like, the food kind of has to replace what the rain does, and I think, and I looked at a global type scale here. The main thing what happens when it stops raining is basically all the plants die.
Yay.
Yay, no more plants.
But it can rain plants, right? It can rain, like, vegetables.
I mean, it can rain dead vegetables. It's not going to rain fucking redwood. That's like true. Redwoods. So the food chain is fucked.
Yeah.
Except it's not.
Oh, yeah, because they can just eat the food.
Right. So the food chain is the transfer of energy from, you know, the bottom level going up. So the plants absorb about, I think it was 0.02% of the energy from the sun that comes to the earth. So stored in the biomass of plants to go up the food chain is 495 kilocalories per meter squared of earth. So that's basically the baseline level of food chain energy. The amount of food that falls, global average 39 inches per year, giving an average calorie amount of food of 881 calories per kilogram, you actually end up with 1,228 calories per meter squared over four, which is close to triple the 495.
So it's better.
So there's actually more energy available for the food chain than there was previously. Not only that, every step up the food chain you go, only about 10% of the energy transfers. So only 10% of the plant energy gets to the things that eat the plants. And, you know, 10% of that goes to the next size animal.
I mean, would there even be a food chain anymore? Because they don't have to hunt anymore.
There's definitely going to be some sort of food chain, but it's basically going to be one really wide bottom and a lot of omnivores.
Right.
So really, the actual amount of animal life on the planet should increase, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, more animals. I'm pro-animal.
Another thing that people might worry about is another important thing that plants do is produce oxygen for all these animals.
I like oxygen.
I like oxygen too.
I try to consume it basically every day of my life.
Almost every day.
I was surprised to learn that actually 70% of the world's oxygen is produced by algae. So only 30% of the oxygen in the air comes from land plants. And I checked it on the algae. I was thinking, well, maybe now that there's no... looking at the ocean, I was like, well, if it's raining food, that's pretty salty compared to, you know, pure water. So I looked up some research about how algae does in saltier conditions. And they slow down, but they do okay. So I figured in the reduction in the algae population. And I figured, so they produce 70% of the oxygen. There's less of them. We got about 50% production of oxygen compared to what we have now. So not great, but also not a huge problem either. So I saw some math online about how long the oxygen levels would take to deplete if all the oxygen producing things went away. And it would take us about 400 years to use up all the oxygen. And that's at zero. So we're still producing 50%. So that's going to be way out there, thousands of years. So I imagine humans are going to be able to figure out something to do with the oxygen problem. Or maybe we'll evolve. Who knows? So the last thing I looked at is the food waste. I looked at it very briefly. What I learned was what we actually do with recycled food waste. So what they do is they take the food waste, they put it in an anaerobic digester where microorganisms break down the food in the absence of oxygen. So you don't even need oxygen for this, which is also a great thing for our current planet.
That's convenient.
And what it does is this process breaks down the food and it produces biogas, a mixture of methane and carbon dioxide, which can then be used to produce heat, electricity, or transport fuels. So really, oxygen's not a problem. There's food for everybody. There's now basically infinite fuel. And
I think the world's just a better place.
Yeah, the world's basically just a better place overall. Like, water, you can go get those desalination plants running. Like, we can adapt. Like, these are all surmountable problems.
I have some comments on the waste portion.
Yeah, so we can get there.
Yeah.
I'll let you do that, but I'm living in my happy world now where everyone's great. And there's so many big animals around. Bears for everybody.
So I like your idyllic post-food rain world, but I'm going to come and just sort of dump a nice big bowl of chili on it.
Okay.
So I thought a lot about the waste portion of this situation. And there are a couple of real problems to consider, which really the big divide is between food rain that falls over land and food rain that falls over water. I didn't actually look into the water quite as much because it wound up being a little bit less interesting, but you're definitely going to have to filter the water, but you know, we can get around that. You're going to have to like filter the water a lot, I guess, is sort of, you know, the big takeaway. For food that falls on the ground, things get kind of tricky. So sort of what I sort of started thinking about was just how do you get rid of all the food that falls on the ground? Because I sort of assumed, so I did some calculations on like, you know, volume of water as well. So if you have a square mile and you have 1 inch of rain, that winds up being 4,014,489,600 cubic inches of rain.
Only?
Per square mile.
Only?
It's a decent amount. So I'm going to assume in these some of these calculations that we can catch about a quarter of the food that falls, which just is a bit of idea of scale here. The approximate...
Now, when you say catch, like catch in our mouths, like your snowflakes?
I mean, like people are going to set up nets and buckets and things like that and try to like...
Just going
to
stand outside, tilt your head up and open your mouth.
I mean, that's going to be a portion of it, yeah. And sort of for an idea of the scale of all of this, the approximate volume of a chicken nugget is about 35 cubic centimeters. So if we caught a quarter, so that like 4 billion cubic inches of volume is about 65,785 cubic meters of volume. So Boston is about 90 square miles. That works out to about 5,920,000 cubic meters. So if you catch a quarter of that, that winds up being about 1.5 million cubic meters. And that in chicken nuggets is approximately 126,872,421,429 chicken nuggets, which is about 7.5 trillion calories.
I like the idea, though, Ben. I'm staying on the optimist side.
I like the idea of chicken nugget storm.
Yeah, I'm driving to the beach. I decided that I was going to risk it. And, oh, man, here it is, chicken nugget rain. Should have stayed home. But it's okay. I just pick up my old French fry container from McDonald's, and I put it out the window. And I got a 10-piece chicken McNuggets right there for free while on the road.
But here's...
And I eat those chicken nuggets. Stick it back out. Another 10-piece. Can't stop me. And I got another 10-piece.
If you don't catch it, you still have the 5-second rule. You still have 5 seconds to pick stuff up.
Yeah, and... You grab another one, pass to your buddy, another 10-piece.
But now here's the problem, is that 5-second rule is going to pass pretty quickly, and then you just have a lot of chicken nuggets on the ground. Which, if you caught a quarter of them, you're going to have approximately, like, almost 400 trillion chicken nuggets on the ground from this 1 inch of rainfall in Boston. So I started trying to think of ways to... Not even, like, I like your idea of converting to biofuel... I just focus on trying to get them somewhere that's not just all over the ground. That was the problem I tried to figure out, was how do you deal with all of these fucking chicken nuggets or whatever?
Launch it into space.
Well, just, like, even gathering them. So, like, I look at, like street sweepers. The volume of a street sweeper, like, the amount it can carry, is about 4.6 cubic meters, which is only about 131,000 chicken nuggets. That's not gonna cut it. Like, you're going to need a lot of sweepers constantly for every storm. Like, it's not... It works out to 965,000 loads of street sweepers. And I don't even know if a street sweeper can, like, pick up a chicken nugget. I don't even know if that works. Don't get me started on, like, drumsticks or something. Like...
I have a mental image now of, like, a Bob the Builder, like, living street sweeper, like, going down the street. And there's, like, one chicken nugget on the ground. He's like... Oh, I don't know about this. Bob, I don't know if I can take it. I don't know if it's going to fit.
So I was trying to make street sweepers work, and it's just not going to cut it. So I was like, okay, so we need something a little more intense. So I was like, all right, what about going with Boston? What about, like, the same way you deal with snow? What if you just get plows and just plow away these chicken nuggets? So apparently a snow plow can clear an acre of ground in approximately 45 minutes. Boston is about 57,600 acres, which means that it's 43,200 plow hours to clear it, which is 1,800 plow days. So once again, that's not really sustainable.
Boston manages, kinda.
It can work. And I mean, obviously that's not a perfect calculation because not all of Boston is roads. But unfortunately, that brings up the other problem, which is not all of Boston is roads. So you can't use a snowplow or a street sweeper on, like, a field. So, like, no joke, my plan was to get, like, pigs and just let them go. But I don't think that even that's going to be enough. Like,
be free, pigs.
Pigs will rule the world.
Like, but, like, that's the problem. Like, you're going to have so much food on the ground. If you have a 1-inch storm, I don't think you can get out of that. You're just going to get buried in this particular example that I keep coming back to, chicken nuggets. And I honestly don't know what to do about it.
See, that's where your pessimism and my optimism come at each other. Because in my optimistic mind, the world's just going to evolve. Like, if there's plentiful food, animals are just going to reproduce and survive. And there's going to be more things eating them. There's going to be 20 times as many pigs. And they're just going to all be fine and dandy, hanging out, eating food. And it's going to keep going until there's an equal number of food-eating pigs to food that needs pigs to eat them.
And then the pigs will eat all the food, and the pigs will still be hungry, and the pigs will see us, and that's the real disaster.
There's going to be basically limitless bacon.
But we already have that from the food rain.
Yeah. If it rains bacon once, then we don't need bacon.
Well, I mean, bacon goes bad pretty fast. No one wants... You don't want to eat bacon, like, more than... Really, like, 10 minutes after it gets off the fucking
grill. But that's my exact point, is that what if it rains bacon, and then suddenly we just have all this rotting bacon everywhere?
Well, there's no mad pig disease, right? Pigs can eat bacon.
Oh, that just seems cruel.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Well, then they would just build up their bacon parts, like...
and become mega bacon?
Everything that a pig needs to make bacon has to be in bacon.
Yeah.
So, my answer is actually slightly inconclusive, because I honestly, like, everything I tried, I could not figure out a way to deal with all of the excess food. Because the sheer quantity of excess food is staggering.
I do like the mental image of you being at your desk and being like, damn it!
No, I was seriously
how do I
like,
fix this? And someone's like comes like Ben, do you need a hand? It's like, I just
so many chicken nuggets.
There was a point where I legitimately had three different windows with different calculators open on my computer, like with different numbers in them, trying to figure this out.
Just like a giant chalkboard. Chicken nugget equals question mark.
It's like one of those murder things where like things are connected, but it's just 85 pictures of chicken nuggets connected by strings.
If this were a movie, there'd just be a shot of me like lying in bed, like tossing and turning. It's just like ghostly chicken nuggets rain around me.
Yeah, you're tossing up a hacky sack that like slowly turns into a chicken nugget as you toss it. And you're like, ah!
And Matt Damon is just going to walk past your chalkboard one day and solve it.
Yeah.
He just puts, like, a square root somewhere, and you're like,
my God.
Oh, my God!
I also, unrelated to the whole chicken nugget thing, back before I realized that street sweepers were an incredible waste of time, I found a thing talking about how Toronto bought a fleet of 50 $300,000 street sweepers, and they swept up 18,000 metric tons of material each year. I was like, okay, we're going to be good, before I realized the scale of all of this. And in the process of doing some math, I was trying to find the heaviest foods by volume to do some, like, math. And Google suggested heaviest foods by weight, which, come on, guys. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
The most of whatever you have.
Right. So, yeah. So, I guess just, like, try to plow it and then hope there's a lot of pigs. I don't know, guys.
Make chicken nugget juice.
When life food chicken nuggets.
Make chicken nugget aid.
Yeah, we really... I think we landed on, like, three different... We usually either all come to an agreement of whether it sucks or is good. But I feel like I'm at like 10 out of 10, this is great. Or maybe not 8 or 9 out of 10, let's be honest here. And then Chris is like a 3 or a 4, and then Ben's just like a 1.
Yeah, I'm just like, we're, 0 to 1. We are drowning in like meat sauce within the first month. So, which God, I didn't even think about like how to clean up like if it rains slushies. I don't even know what you'd do in that situation.
Well, that's just like snow.
I guess, yeah. Anyway.
Yep, anyway, we are off to our sponsors!
Spotters!
Guys, I have a bit of a confession, though. In the last few episodes that we've done, not saying all of them, not saying none of them, our sponsors may not have been, as you call them, real companies that pay real money for our services and our advertising.
Wait, are we not getting paid?
Yeah, guys, we're not getting paid.
Also, what happened to all that money I sent to those companies?
I don't know. I think I bought chicken nuggets. But luckily... But that's a problem of the past, because now we got totally real sponsors!
Sweet, I'm getting paid. Am I getting paid?
No.
Have you noticed that things keep disappearing from your apartment? Do you sometimes see your neighbors wearing clothes that you thought used to be yours? Has your roommate, Jim, who's a really nice guy but sometimes has trouble being direct with people, started being much more angry with you recently? Maybe even angry enough to pay for an ad on a podcast? Is your name Frank? If this sounds like your life, why not try locking the goddamn door when you leave the apartment, Frank? It's so easy. Just stick the key in there and turn it, and then maybe people will keep stealing Jim's stuff. Just try locking the goddamn door today. Seriously, Frank, just try it.
Introducing iJuice, the premium brand eye drop that everyone is talking about. No, it's not that gross fluid from your eyeball, even though that's what it sounds like. It's juice that you put in your eye. And juice is a bad choice of words. It's really just eye drops. But they're top-of-the-line, high-performing eye drops. And no, it's not for drinking, even though that's what the word juice usually implies. Don't drink it. You'll get sick. But you won't get sick if you put it in your eyes, because they're eye drops. So remember, for clear, refreshed eyes, use eye juice. Man, they really could have come up with a better name for this stuff.
You thought those Japanese toilets were smart? Maybe. But are they as smart as Dr. Albert Einstein? I think not. That's why we're proud to present the Ein Toilet, the smartest of smart toilets. Each toilet's neural network algorithms come preloaded with all of Einstein's seminal works. So while you're dropping a deuce, your toilet will be dropping a deuce on humanity's understanding of the inner workings of time and space. It even produces its own toilet paper transcribed with your toilet's latest calculations and working theories. The Ein Toilet. E equals MC Poop! Whew, feels a lot better having real sponsors there in the middle.
And getting paid.
Oh, so much, so many dollars in my bank account, you guys have no idea. Like, I could tell you all the zeros, but it needs like one of those times 10 to the some number.
Is it zero?
A lot of zeros, including in the exponents. But anyway, on to our second question of the day. What if you were only 6 inches tall? So the first thing I considered, and really the only thing I considered, was what job would you have if you were only 6 inches tall?
Of course.
Because obviously, like, living and living expenses are way reduced, actually. So if you have any kind of real job, you're just fucking proportionally making so much money.
Yeah.
So after some brainstorming, what I decided was the best and most awesome job when you were 6 inches tall is being an exterminator.
Ooh. It'd be kind of scary, wouldn't it?
It seems terrifying, yeah.
Yeah, so here's one thing. New York City, you're an exterminator. New York City rats are about 16 to 20 inches long.
You're a goddamn knight. Like,
like I said, you're going to be the most badass person in the world. So they are bigger than you by, like, I mean, you're about as tall as, you know, you're taller than them, but they're twice as long as you are tall.
Yeah.
And another fun thing that you're going to have to struggle with is they gather in small colonies of about 30 to 50 rats, which I don't consider small colonies, but that's what it said on the internet.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That implies that there are also large colonies of rats, which makes me absolutely terrified.
Yeah, so you're going to need a weapon. And I was thinking, like, making, like, a little crossbow or something cute like that, like a spear. But no, this is America. You can get a fucking gun.
Can you hold a gun?
The miniature revolver C1ST, which you can purchase for $6,200 from Swiss Minigun, is a tiny firearm that measures just more than 2 inches long and weighs less than an ounce.
Will you be able to withstand the recoil?
That was my next question.
Finally, I did a lot of ballistics. I did not look at that one.
That's important. It's an important detail.
I'll have to do a follow-up episode where I check my math. But I considered the other important things, whether they would actually do any good, because this is a tiny gun. Like, it fires a 2.34 millimeter caliber bullet.
Oh, that's adorable. I guess it's like the size of your fist, though, right?
It's like smaller than the palm of your hand. Funnily, it's actually banned in the US because a gun is not allowed to have a barrel less than 3 inches long for, like, concealed weapons stuff. And the whole gun isn't 3 inches long. But it is just small enough for you to be able to use it as, like, you know, maybe not as, like, a pistol, but you can hold on to it and, you know, jigger it around.
I mean, the concealed weapon thing doesn't apply to you.
Yeah.
You can't conceal that.
It is your job. This is your professional equipment. Like, this is your job. You're going to have a license anyway.
This gun is a third as long as you are. This is basically like one of those giant anime swords, but a revolver, which is pretty badass, except that it's also adorable.
It's got a lot of good stuff going for it. So my first question is, does this gun even work? Will this gun actually produce enough force to hurt a rat? According to the internet, the force of this gun is 0.71 foot-pounds, or about a newton of force.
Doesn't seem like a lot.
It's not great.
That's what I was thinking. So I went online, and this is probably my favorite thing that someone actually ever did this, from Studies on Wounds Healing by H. Fenton and G.B. West from the University of London in Brunswick Square. They did this study back in 1963, where they measured the tensile strength of rat skin.
As one does.
as one does in 1963 when there's obviously nothing better to do.
The 60s were a weird time, guys.
Why would you ever need that information?
I don't know. I think I think the actual reason is medicine and, you know, talking about needles or scalpels and all this bullshit. But I like it out of context way better. Anyhow, shoot tensile strength of rat skin 200 grams per centimeter, giving it a shear strength of 120 grams per centimeter. And another fun thing to Google, well, the thickness of rat skin is 2.09 millimeters.
Good to know.
Good to know.
So doing some calculations, the force required to puncture that thickness of skin with the radius of that bullet, you actually only need 0.002 newtons, which is way less than our one newton.
All right.
So this gun is like overkill.
Not as much because, yeah, you can break the skin, but you're just breaking the skin. The question is, does it do any damage to the rat?
Oh, yeah.
So I sat down and I broke out literal integrals, figuring out from the initial traveling velocity of 400 feet per second, how much damage it does based on the density of the rat flesh. So if you, once you hit it at 400 feet per second, you're going to, once it's in the rat, it's going to decelerate at 142,000 feet per second squared. And tippity-tappity-tippity-tappity, all the math done. Your bullet actually goes through about 6 to 7 inches of rat before it stops.
All right,
that's a good amount.
Long story short, we have our weapon. So, you can now kill rats. Great. Second problem. There's 30 to 50 of these things. Things can go south pretty quickly. You need an escape plan. The nice thing about being very small is that you're also very light. So I was thinking, can you use those little CO2 cartridges as a jetpack? Again, math time. I did a lot of math on this one. I had nothing better to do with my week.
I like to imagine that each of these is like a question on a physics test.
Yeah, they honestly could be. I got to rehash some of my old physics knowledge.
Question one. If you are 6 inches tall and you need to kill a rat with a tiny gun.
Can you do it?
Can you do it?
Why aren't tests like that? I would love that. That would be the best fucking exam.
I know, right?
Except it wouldn't be because when your goal isn't to have fun and your goal is to pass the exam, getting a bullshit question like that is like, what the fuck, professor?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I remember there was one exam. It was like, we learned how to do buildings where it's like, you learned how to do like, design like three beams next to each other. And that was all fine and good. And that was complicated. And then our final question was like, imagine a building with infinite beams.
No.
And literally I was like, are you goddamn joshing me? Anyhow, back to tiny person jetpack. According to my calculations, you weigh about 0.9 pounds or 40 grams. The CO2 canisters weigh 25 grams each. So they actually weigh more. If you put two of them together, they actually weigh more than you do. But like when you get to sizes that small, like you can really support a lot more than your body weight. It's not equivalent of like carrying like 200 pounds on your back. So what can you do with these gas canisters? If you just cancel out the force of gravity on yourself, the CO2 cartridge has 850 psi of pressure within it, and if you use just the minimal amount of force, you can actually hover for about 11 seconds with your two canisters, which is pretty handy for maneuvering around.
Yeah, no, that's good.
But you're not going to really use this for travel like that much. Like, this is your emergency button. So what happens when you hit the emergency button? If you look at those little car races where you, like, make the wooden car in shop and you put the canister in the back and they shoot off, that's pretty much going full out. So the gas canisters get used up in 0.45 seconds. So, let me see here,
Do a math in your head?
Yeah, doing the math in my head real quick. Sorry, I have a lot of notes and I'm trying to find the bottom number. So, your thing shoots up. After 0.45 seconds, you are traveling 109 miles per hour, straight up.
And then you die.
It takes 5 seconds after that before you finally hit the peak zero velocity.
And then you die.
Yeah, or 1 sec. I mean, again, you can use this in short bursts. So if you're in an enclosed space, you can just, like, shoot up for not the full 0.45 seconds, just for, like, half a second and get up to whatever you need to. So you have enough get up and go to escape away from the rats. But I'm thinking the movie moment where you gotta, like, use the full canister. It's like, the rat zombies are converging, there's thousands of them, and you need to get the fuck out of there. So if you use them all, and you add up all the distance you traveled and your speed and everything, you get 450 feet of lift from these two cartridges. And what you guys said, hey, you're dead. Not necessarily. The largest G-force survived on record is by John Stopp, as he set a speed sled land speed record. Has the word speed in it like four times, because this man survived a G-force of 25 Gs.
Whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, so basically 25 times the force of gravity pushing on you.
How much is like a normal roller coaster? There's good up to like 4 Gs maybe, right?
Yeah, pretty small.
Don't people usually black out at like 9 or 10?
Yeah, like 11 is if you're not trained, you're going to have some problems. You're going to be trained. This job is not a job you don't train for.
No, definitely. Yeah.
You are going to need your fucking $6,200 miniature revolver C1ST manufactured by Swiss Minigun. But the jetpack only puts you under 24 Gs of force.
So you're just good.
Technically alive.
Technically alive. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think you need to get any more badass than that. Like, you have your gun, you have your jetpack. You're basically, like, the rat, the Boba Fett of rats. Oh, two guns! Oh, you can kill twice as many rats!
Yeah.
And once you make it real big, you can get even more badass. Because there is a solid gold version of the tiny gun available for $60,000 that even has a tiny rocket launcher attachment. Which fire luminescence rockets that explode in green, white, or red.
Why?
That's incredible.
Why does this exist?
I think when you're buying a $60,000 2-inch long golden gun, you don't ask questions like that.
Like, if you're making a gun, why would you ever think, oh, I'm going to attach a rocket to this?
Chris, you're not making a gun. You're making a tiny, tiny, tiny gun. This is like a hobby project. This is not...
Yeah, the bigger problem is not just why would you put a rocket launcher on it? Why would you put a rocket launcher in which the rocket is approximately the size of like a fingernail clipping on it? I think I was overestimating the sound that it was going to make. The impact is like...
Okay, I was about to say, I'm like, Ben, your mic didn't even pick up that noise you made.
No, yeah, that's how quiet it was.
You're fighting all these rats and it sounds something like this. The action! So yeah, that's what I think is the most badass job if you were 6 inches tall.
Not necessarily the easiest job. Definitely badass.
It seems incredibly dangerous still.
I think I would probably die on like in like the first week.
Yeah. I would probably die in the first day.
Probably.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough because you also don't have like a rat hunting sensei that's gonna teach you the ropes.
Yeah, you're gonna be the first one.
Your old grizzled guy who's gonna like, you know, give you some tough lessons, but you know, when you're about to die, he'll kill 30 rats, you know, before they kill you.
No, they're just gonna kill you.
Yeah, you're just gonna get murdered. But to be that kind of exterminator, like, you gotta risk something. You gotta risk it for the biscuit.
If you can pull it off, you'll be super popular because people will like you. Like, if you hear about someone doing that, that's awesome. You want to hire them?
Oh, yeah. You can get some TV crossovers. Like, you join up with, like, hoarders, and you just, like, go into, like, the nastiest houses with the biggest infections. But, yeah, that whole thing just makes me happy. So, another one in the optimistic book for me. Ben, tell me about your horrible pessimistic way this is going to ruin your life.
So, no, I think I figured out a pretty nice little life as well, a slightly less dangerous than yours, which is not saying much, since I think most lives are less dangerous than the one that you have proposed here.
Hey, it's life in the big city, guys. It ain't easy.
So one of the first big issues that I did notice is that transportation is going to be very, very tricky for you. You obviously cannot drive.
Well, come on.
You can get a tiny car.
But, well, so, all right, so the problem, so I thought of this, I thought about, like, a tiny car. So, well, actually, let me just go through it. So, you can't drive, you can't take the bus, because I don't think you can, like, get onto a bus. You can't take an Uber, because you can't get into the car. Like, I think that there's, like, a lot of, like, basically every means of transportation is kind of not really going to fly for you.
I mean, it's your premise, so I don't want to kill it, but you underestimate my willingness to pick up any tiny 6-inch tall man and bring him onto the bus with me. Holy fuck, that would be make my day.
We'll get there. I thought about if you could, like, ride an animal, and I went down that path a little bit, but then I realized, and this is the same issue you get with a tiny car, I feel like any of those are still going to be so slow. You're going to be, like, slower than walking, like, as a normal person, even if you're, like, I don't know what the biggest animal you could ride is, like, a ferret? I don't know, like...
Instead of exterminating the rat, you could train it.
Yeah, rats are pretty quick.
Yeah.
I guess that's true.
They can go faster than walking, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe it's close, right? Like,
I didn't check if rats were going to run you down before you could pull the trigger.
I think they could probably, like, burst faster than walking, but, like, over a long period of time, they're going to slow down.
I've seen rats go pretty fast.
But that's, like scurrying, though, you know? That's like their panic run, so it's not sustainable. So I thought about flying in a drone, but then I realized that you can't actually make the controls small enough for you to use them, I don't think.
Okay.
So you'd have to have someone fly you around, which would be, I would totally do, because that sounds awesome. But, like, the flight time's not long, and you can't actually control it yourself, so it's not that helpful for you most of the time. So really what I realized, also, stairs are a big problem, because apparently the, like, standard height for stairs in the U.S. is about 7 inches.
Oh, so 7.5. Oh, no, it's 7 by 10.5 or 7.5 by 10?
I think the max is 7.75 or something. I think generally, like, the rule of thumb is 7 by 10. 7 up, 10 across.
Okay.
So you can get up that.
You can still do it.
You can do it, but it's like every step is like scaling a fence. Like, you're not going to want to do it all that much.
You don't want to have to rest after every 2 steps.
Right, yeah. And like going down steps is a little more simple, but a little more dangerous. So really, you kind of need to be carried by someone basically all of the time to get around in like any kind of reasonable time frame. And I realize, like you, that like your actual like cost of living is going to be very small because you are also very small.
You just gotta find a girlfriend who's, you know, not too picky about which is the 6-inch dimension.
So, so what I realized that you can actually. So, you know, I've tried to be altruistic a couple times on this show unsuccessfully. I always turn to smuggling or making money. But I actually found a way to be altruistic this time that I think works out better for everyone. So I figure you can actually basically get into a symbiotic relationship with a blind person. Where basically you are their seeing eye tiny man. Where you ride on their shoulder and just whisper in their ear things they need to be aware of. It's perfect. Because you can basically...
Oh, I liked it till you said the word whisper.
Well, so actually, so the funny thing is, you're going to be very quiet. You're not actually... If you whisper... You will be literally inaudible. You're going to be speaking as loud as you can, and it's going to be a whisper because your lungs are very small. So you actually can't really talk to people who are, like, any distance away from you, I don't think, because you're just not going to be able to, like, project your voice far enough. So this is actually, it's perfect because you are their eyes, they are your voice, and they are your transportation and, like...
Everything else.
Everything else aside from eyes, which they don't have. Well, I mean, they have, but not, you know... They can't see, you know, you see for them, they do everything else for you. And your payment is just like, when they get a meal, they give you like a bite and you're fed. That's all you need.
What does your shoulder perch look like? This is what I want to get into.
So now. I was thinking about this. And I mean, you could just hold on, but I think that's going to be really like tough for you and sort of uncomfortable for them in the long term if you're like hanging on to their ear to like for like support. I think you could get like a net, like sort of like, one of those, you know, like the travel pillows that, like, go around your neck? Like that, but with, like, a cup holder you sit in.
Oh, like a sidecar.
Yeah, but on their neck.
I think you should get, like, a throne.
So, I think the important thing is you need comfort for everyone involved, right? Like, I don't want to be an inconvenience to this person.
You could do what they did in Ratatouille. You could wear, like, a chef hat, and you could be in the chef hat, even though they're not a chef. They might be a chef, you don't know.
They could be a chef.
Yeah, just find a chef to do this.
That would be fun.
They could wear, like, a 2-story house hat. That would be cool.
You just live permanently on their head?
Well, not permanently. They put you down when they're inside.
So I mean, I feel like, this really does, like, you know, think about just how much in their day-to-day life, suddenly, you know, you think about, like, if you have a seeing eye dog, it's very limited in the information it can actually give you. You know, obviously they're trained to, you know, tell them when they're, like, walk off the street or if there's, you know, when it's safe to cross streets, things like that. But they can't actually, like, read signs to them, things like that. You can greatly enhance their life at basically no cost to them, aside from having to carry around a tiny person all the time.
Except completely invading their personal space 100% of the time. Hope they like you.
Right. I mean, it's definitely going to be a complicated relationship. You don't want to get on... Neither of you want to get on each other's bad sides. Because... The pranks that can be pulled are pretty brutal and possibly lethal.
It's gonna be tough to advertise yourself as a blind person symbiote, like, because there's obviously not like a match dating service for it. And even if there was, like, you'd have your profile picture, And what would you like put, like, not to scale or like stand next to a penny? And then they'd be
I think that's the key, is that you actually make it exactly to scale.
Yeah, this photo on your, if you're using an iPhone 5, this is 100% to scale.
It doesn't really help them because they're blind, so they can actually see the photo. So getting started is tricky. But I think once you develop this relationship, this is actually going to really help out both of you. And you just like live in a shoebox on their dresser or something.
That could probably last your entire life, right?
Yeah, right? Or I mean, at least as long as you have your blind person. I don't know what you do if your blind person, you know, like passes away in the night, because I don't know how you have to live on the floor, I guess, actually. Because if you're like on a dresser, I don't know how you get down on your own.
I mean, I think you're going to get some parkour skills, like some rock climbing abilities. Like, you're going to have a grappling hook, and you're going to be able to do the thing where, like, you go into the kitchen and, like, you grapple up onto, like, the shelf, and you run across the counter and over the cheese grater and then leap onto the fridge and then dive across with your paper airplane and make it to the phone and knock it off the cord, and then it's hanging there, and you hit the buttons by stomping on them with your feet.
And then like, your tiny person voice is not loud enough to be heard through the phone, unfortunately.
Well, that's the nice thing about 911, is that you don't have to say anything. They'll come if you're just silent.
And then they will step on you accidentally in the confusion.
You're worried about getting around, but it's called falling with style.
This is true. I guess actually, when you're that small, hitting the ground doesn't actually hurt that much because you're very light. So maybe you just like jump off the dresser and like roll.
I don't know if that is accurate.
That's the reason that like ants can fall so far. It's because like they have so little mass. That I guess it's probably not the same, quite the same scale. But all right, disregard that part. You will totally die if you fall off a dresser. Major downside of this lifestyle.
Actually, I don't think you will, because I think you don't, because you're so small.
I see, but how small are you? Like,
you're not that small, but like.
So a dollar bill is 6 inches long.
Okay.
So you're the length of a dollar bill.
That's pretty small. Okay, important question. Did somehow none of us figure out how heavy you would be if you were only 6 inches tall?
I said a little bit less than a pound.
Oh, you did? Okay.
It was important for my jetpack question.
Oh, right. You're right. You're the jetpack. Okay. All right. So maybe you'd be okay.
If you had a jetpack, you'd be fine.
If you had a jetpack, you'd be fine. I guess jetpack should be included in all of these answers just for safety's sake.
General rule of thumb, if we do not add the word jetpack to a question answer, listeners, just mentally add it yourself. It's just going to make everything better.
Just assume like, jetpacks.
We're here for your enjoyment, so when we talk about it raining food, just imagine it's raining food and it's meatballs, but I have a jetpack. So my day's pretty good.
when you said that, for some reason, I thought you were going to say the meatballs had jetpacks.
Oh my God, that's even better. See?
So in summary, I think this is a very good plan. The one thing I did realize is that like, I believe like all of us, we all use some sort of corrective lenses.
Yes.
Barely, yeah.
That's going to be problematic because I don't think you can make like glasses or contacts that are, you know, like a quarter of a millimeter in diameter.
And you can't just pull the Hubble out of space like in episode one.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe you can figure it out, but
it kind of throws a wrench into your being a seeing eye person for a blind man.
So, yeah, that works if you have good vision. You kind of need good vision. Otherwise, you're kind of boned. So anyway, hey, Chris, what do you have?
So I did the same thing as you guys. I tried to find a job that you'd be able to get as a 6-inch person. And obviously, any like physical work isn't going to be good because you're very small. You can't like lift anything. Office work is not going to be great either because you can't like use a keyboard. I mean, you can use it, but you're going to be very slow at typing.
Yeah, you're like one word per minute as you like traverse the keyboard.
Yeah, so you're not going to be productive enough for someone to hire you. I don't think anyone would hire you.
Yeah.
So instead of finding a traditional job, I was thinking about like what I would be good at. And a small person would be good at being quiet and not being seen. So I was thinking, let's be a thief.
Back on form, absurd hypotheticals.
Ben avoided the thief life, but I came back to it.
I didn't pick the thief life. The thief life picked me.
So I was thinking of things that I can steal, and I can't really be like a traditional thief. I can't like steal artwork or anything because I'm too small. I can't carry it.
Right.
So I was thinking, and I was actually thinking of this question while I was in the office, in my office, and I was walking into our kitchen, and I saw our vending machine. I was thinking, I could fit in there if I was 6 inches tall. So I would be a vending machine thief. So obviously you're not going to really get that much money from vending machines. But as we've pointed out already, the cost of living is going to be a lot less if you're 6 inches tall.
Oh, yeah.
I looked around for like a house. So like a dollhouse that is 2,600 square inches comparatively, square footage-wise, proportionally, that's about 2,600 square feet for, like, a normal person. So that's, like, a decently sized house. And I found that that costs $219. So that's not bad at all. I mean, you'll need to add, like, electricity and plumbing and stuff, and that'll cost a little extra. But
you have to drag over one iPhone cord from the wall to bring it in.
But yeah, your house is going to be super cheap. So I think like the average price for a snack in a vending machine is, or at least the one that in my office, it was $1.25 for like a bag of chips. And you're going to be limited to the amount of stuff you can carry. I think you can carry like two bags of chips at a time. So it's going to be slow going. So that's not really that great. But you can use these, you can just use the normal vending machine as like your starting point and you'll work your way up because they have other types of vending machines that have more expensive things. They have vending machines that have iPods and Kindles. So that's pretty good. You can steal an iPod or a Kindle.
That's like half your house right there.
Yeah, it's like $50 or something, $100. But vending machines get even crazier than that. There's one vending machine in LA that sells caviar.
Oh,
what?
Yeah. So if you go to LA, you can steal caviar.
Oh, God. I just thought about eating a giant piece of caviar.
Yeah, it's like, not a good...
Proportionally, like, if you eat, like, a tennis ball-sized piece of caviar, that just explodes with that saltiness in your mouth. Oh, God, that's also a very sexy thing I just said, but I didn't mean to. I meant it to be bad.
I mean, this caviar isn't going to be for you. You're going to sell it so that you can buy your house. So the priciest piece of can, I guess they're served in cans, can of caviar in this vending machine is $500. So that's like two houses right there.
Well, you're going to want a summer home.
So that's pretty good. And then once you hit that vending machine, you'll have enough experience, I think, to go even bigger. So in New York, there's a vending machine in the Hudson Hotel. And this vending machine is going to be like the Fort Knox of vending machines.
Yeah.
So they sell designer jewelry.
Oh my God.
They have 24 karat handcuffs. Don't ask me why.
Kinky.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to get tied to the bed, they better fucking spend a lot of money to do it.
Right, yeah.
You can get a two-night stay at a penthouse in a hotel that's worth $4,500. And then the crown jewel of everything, the most expensive thing you can get from this vending machine, is a Ferrari rental for a week that is worth $10,000.
Whew!
So if you get this one item, you're set for life. So this if you hit this vending machine, this is the sort of thing where, like, in a heist movie, we're doing one last job and then we're out of the game.
This is the one last job, yeah.
We don't even need to do it, but we just need to do it. I just gotta feel the blood pumping in my veins.
Oh, it's like one last job and then you're out.
Well, yeah, but they usually don't have to do the job because it's like the seventh movie and they've already stolen, like, the Declaration of Independence
where
four
times.
It's
like Ocean's 13.
Yeah, it's like Ocean 15 and a half. The next one, and they're just like, we're gonna rob this bank? Yeah, we're gonna rob this bank. Everyone get ready for this montage. All right, we did it. We stole it. Ah, shit, it's the cops. I'm gonna murder two of you this movie. Okay, two of you are dead. Credits.
I feel like I don't even need to watch the Ocean movies anymore. That's just like a perfect summary right there.
Not after that 6-inch summary I gave you.
Yeah, and so these items, they're kept on like a certificate of purchase, so it's just like a piece of paper. So it's not even that hard to carry out because you're limited with how much you can carry. The one problem is it's not going to be like a normal vending machine. It's higher security. So you're going to need to like know what you're doing beforehand. I don't actually know how this vending machine works inside because I haven't seen it. So I don't know what you would need. All I know is that there's like an automated door that opens and closes that you need to get into somehow. And I also know that this vending machine doesn't just sell expensive stuff. They don't just sell $10,000 Ferraris. They also sell sticks of gum.
Oh, shit, I hit A1. I'm fucked. I meant B2 for the gum. Oh, no.
Yeah.
My bank account.
That's their entire business model.
Yeah. So it's not actually that hard to get in. You just buy a thing of gum, a stick of gum. The door opens and you go inside.
And then you chew the gum.
Getting out might be a problem.
Then you chew the gum. And you use that as a balloon to very gently make your final escape.
There is a roof on the vending machine.
Well, you cut through it with your MacGyvered... you connect some wires, and then you burn a hole, and you pop up, and then you have your stick of gum, and you chew it, and then you float gently down, and then you accidentally get the gum on the piece of paper, and you're like, shit, but it's laminated paper, so it comes off okay, and then you run out of the hotel, and nobody's the wiser.
I'm just imagining a like, regular-sized gum bubble, like, popping on you while you're 6 inches tall, and that's just gonna be the worst cleanup ever.
Yeah, you're not gonna be able to blow a giant bubble as a tiny person. You're just gonna blow a tiny bubble.
So you bring a CO2 canister, and you use it to get up to the top. And then you use
your rocket launcher gold gun.
And then you use the caster to fill up the bubble gum.
And you have your blind person on lookout duty.
Yeah. You do need a second person to get out, so you can have the blind person.
He's definitely the distraction. So he's like, he's around, and he's like, just like 4 feet away from the vending machine, being like, I can't find my 6-inch man. And I think that'll be actually work, because no one's going to believe him. Everyone's going to be like, oh, he's blind and delusional, poor guy. And then they're going to take him away, and it's going to be all you.
Yeah, I like this. I like combining all of our answers into stealing stuff from this vending machine.
We have reached absurd hypotheticals nirvana.
Yeah, so that was my answer.
Yeah, and I think that's all we need. Tune in next week, where we answer the following questions. What if everyone was a human Katamari ball? And what if all plants were carnivorous? If you have any questions, comments, or your own hypothetical idea you want us to answer, let us know. You can reach us by email at absurdhypotheticals@gmail.com, send us a tweet at absurdhype, that's H-Y-P-E hype, visit our website, www.nerdchomp.com/absurdhypotheticals, and if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps out the show and lets us keep making it for you.